Return to Camp Blood, episode 63. Super Slash Brothers. This episode is brought to you by Friday 13th Franchise.com.
Jesus Christ. Jason's alive. He killed my friend. Now he's coming to me.
He's got a death curse.
Jason's a legend.
I'm Mrs. Warren, an old friend of the Christies.
Jason belongs in hell.
You're doing it. We can stay here.
Never come back again.
You see, Jason was my son, and today is his birthday.
Welcome to another episode of Return to Camp Blood. I'm your host, Chris, joined by my fellow counselor, Bobby.
Hola.
And joining us from parts unknown, welcome back to the show after so long of being away. E, how's it going today, sir?
Not really tired at all.
what is it, like 6 o'clock in the morning where you're at? 7 in the morning?
Yeah, getting close, yeah. It's pretty damn early.
And we have a special guest in the studio tonight. Welcome to the show, my buddy Steve.
How you doing? How's it going?
All right, so like I have an announcement before we get into the show. We have sort of started a podcast network, which we are currently calling Blairstown Media. You can find that out at blairstownmedia.net. We don't have a dedicated website yet, so I guess it would be pointless for you to go to that. We got a couple shows that we are currently in works to start. One of which is Death Curse Radio with our own Nathan Barker. And basically that's just going to be a general horror show. It'll probably consist of more interviews, than anything else, because Nathan has a pretty far reach in the horror community. And we are also starting for all you World of Warcraft nerds out there, we're starting a...
The correct term is obsessionist, sir.
Obsessionist. We are starting a World of Warcraft lore show called Harbingers of Lore. Neither one of those shows has any episodes up yet, but stay tuned. They're coming. All right, so Freddy vs. Jason was arguably one of the most anticipated films in the entire franchise. We waited 10 long fucking years for Horus Heavyweights to come together in one epic, albeit non-decisive, battle. There are so many barriers to making this film happen, which is why we got Jason X while we waited. And even though fans were generally happy with the film, it's also pretty infamous for the highly controversial decision to recast Kane Hodder as Jason. This is one of my favorite films. Actually, it's my favorite film in the franchise. I know there are some fans out there that would highly contest my choice. I think it's Ease, too, right?
They're like I always say, I'm a huge fan of the original, but that one's definitely up there just because but you know, we were waiting on that one for a really long time. So once it happened, shit, you know, and so much so that I do believe we caught that shit at the theater. How many times? I don't know.
Yeah, we saw it like 4 times in the theater when it came out.
Yeah.
So it, like
a small percentage of the budget off of us.
Yeah, we may have been late on rent a couple times because of that.
Possibly.
But one of the best things that I like about this film is the way the two got brought together. I mean, because it sort of follows what happened in Jason at the end of the Jason Goes to Hell, you know, because Freddy's talking about, you know, I searched the bowels of hell for someone and I found him. So I really dig how they brought those two together. I thought it was I honestly, the whole time, like that whole 10 fucking years that we knew this movie was coming, I scratched my brain as to how they would even get them together in a plausible way at all.
It was just a beautiful poetic symmetry or synergy. one working with one another to bring another to life. It's beautiful. It's like the Lion King.
Yeah, and then you have that opening scene where, you know, Pamela's telling Jason to get up and stuff. I really thought that they should have cast Betsy Palmer to do that. I never heard anything like if they even asked her to do it, but I just felt like that should have been Betsy. And actually, I think the first time that I watched it, I kind of thought for a second that it was initially, but obviously it was not.
Womp, womp, womp.
I can definitely see Frankenstein, especially the way Jason acted. He was just walked quiet, really powerful, strong built. A relentless menace, one that couldn't really be harmed, one that couldn't be. It was great.
Yeah,
I enjoyed that.
See, I hated. You know, even though this is one of my favorite, this is my favorite Jason movie. I think that I like Ken's portrayal of Jason the least in this film. I mean, because, like, yeah, like we've seen him as zombie Jason in the other films, but I just thought his performance, you know, Ken's performance in this film was like way too zombified.
Very bland. Yeah. Very
that's right.
Straightforward.
That is a good word for it.
Yeah. It had no flavor, no spice.
That's true. Yeah. That is a very great way to describe Ken Kurzinger's depiction of Jason. Absolutely.
Though, because Freddy Krueger's character is so over the top with flair and spice, it makes you wonder if it was an intentional way to show the duality between those two characters. Was that intentionally done to overshow just how out there Freddy is comparatively?
Well, I mean, this is one of the New Line films, admittedly. And as we all know, New Line is the house that Freddy built. So, like, well, I get, you know, that they want to sort of, you know, put, I don't want to say a better light on their, you know, on their cash cow, but, you know, I mean, that could have been some of the decision, but I'm sorry. You don't like recast the dude who's been willing to play him the past four films. And then, like, you know, because at that point, he was, in fact, the fan favorite. Through all those years, we didn't get nothing. We didn't get anything out of them.
I feel like by the end of this conversation, this isn't going to be your favorite film anymore.
No, it definitely is. You know, I've had a long time to sort of think about this, and I don't think that, you know, even the negative things that I could say about it would, and admittedly, especially where Ken is concerned, I have nothing but bad things to say about it. But yeah, I don't think there's anything that we could talk about tonight that would change my mind about it. I know that seems like not open-minded at all, but
well, I know you and I have talked about it before, but I think what always stood out to me about the film in general is when it first was announced, you kind of understood that it was going to be a film that didn't take itself too seriously. And I feel like they did a good job of balancing intentionally being not too serious, but also making an enjoyable plotted film. So many times when a film comes out and decides, okay, this is where we're going to let go and not be so serious, it becomes a little slapsticky and silly. Whereas this one kind of towed that line a little bit. You know, if you've seen the DVD and the extra features and whatnot, they actually did a face-off with them as if it was like a boxing weigh-in with the two characters. Yeah. And, you know, in that sense, they took it a really comedic avenue. But then when you watch the film itself, you don't really get that feel. So I thought the way they tiptoed that line was pretty brilliant, actually.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned like something like boxing, because one of the references that I saw was something relating to Rocky, was how Jason can take such a beating but still get back up to want to really kill those fucking teenagers. It doesn't matter what Freddy Krueger does. He's going to take a giant piece of iron onto the chest from like 10 stories up. And then he's still going to push it right off of him. You see that? I mean, you see that a lot in Rocky, was he would just get hit and hit and hit. And then he would still somehow find a way to come back in the end.
Yeah. And speaking of that, you know, that sort of final showdown between Freddy and Jason, like that's probably one of my all-time favorite endings to any of the movies in this franchise. That battle was just so fucking epic, dude.
And while I have seen it countless times, I just want to refresh. This is Freddy ends up decapitating, or excuse me, Jason ends up decapitating Freddy, but we get a little wink from Freddy at the end. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what happens. which, I mean, here's the thing with Freddy, though. Like, you can't kill him in the dream world. You know what? As I'm saying this, we have no definitive proof that they ever got out of the dream world. So maybe if you actually take that Laurie did wake up, you know, when they actually got to the camp, there's no way that, you know, after she brings him to the real world and Jason cuts off his head, that Freddy should have winked. So I guess that might be some proof that maybe Laurie never woke up.
A little hint at something different than we thought.
Yeah, I mean, and I just like literally thought about that just now.
I had never considered that.
No, but that's the only way. That's really the only way you can explain that last bit happening, because otherwise, you know, when Freddy's in the real world, you can actually fucking kill him.
Huh? Way around.
Well, aren't you just a little ball of information?
So like I thought that in terms of like the actors and actresses they got to, you know, be in this film, Kelly Rowling was by far like the worst. Like you go into a slasher or a horror movie not expecting that great of acting, but Kelly Rowling just was terrible. Like it seemed like to me like she was literally reading the script as they were filming it, like she was reading her lines off a fucking cue card. Like her delivery was terrible.
I can agree with you on that. I can agree with you on that, which is why I'm actually kind of happy with her death when she gets smacked half a football field away into a tree. That was I laughed and laughed.
Oh no, I was just the part with that's the only part of the movie where her lines are not horrendously delivered, to be honest. It was kind of funny the way that went down.
They're not even scary.
You little butter knife. What are you doing with those? You're looking a little small between in the crotchal region.
Coming up a little short there between the legs.
No, and I don't recall the scene in particular, but the reason I've always been such a fan of Freddy in general is listening to him just berate his victims is hilarious. And seeing him do it to Jason and Jason doing almost the dog-like head turn of cocking his head to the side as if, who the fuck do you think you're talking to? But yet you still see no facial reaction, of course. You just see this just interaction that is quite amazing on screen.
But and see, that's the thing about having Kane in there. Like if Kane were doing it, you would have got a more you would have got a better reaction. Even though you can't see Jason's face, like just the way Kane's body language is, you would have known what his face looked like underneath that mask.
I've always enjoyed I've always enjoyed Freddy's over the topness, his flair whenever he like living inside of a dream, anything can happen. And he really plays true to that. I'm going to take you, and just like, I forgot which one it was, what Freddy movie it was, but it was in the opening scene of Freddy versus Jason when Home Dude's tendons were acting like puppet string.
That's in three or four. That's the Dream Warriors, I think.
Yeah, that one was, that one had me cringe a little bit. But that's the reason why I like Freddy, is because he's imaginative.
To say the least.
He is definitely that.
But, yeah, I mean, which we had a listener mail early on, you know, going back to, you know, Freddy and Jason's interaction within the dream world. We had a listener mail a while back, and we have a few new people on. So I guess we can sort of revisit this idea here. I think the gist of the mail was like, theories as to why Jason seemed to have been scared of the water, you know, that waterfall, when he's in his own dream state with Freddie. How do you guys take that? Because obviously he's not that afraid of the water, because in several films he comes out of it to kill your ass.
Well, I enjoyed the fact when it started raining on him, how he kind of regressed back to a child, which the water kind of brought him back to that. Because you remember, he's in a dream, and everything in a dream means something. So him seeing the water, he knows he's asleep. And maybe that brought him back. And that's why he's scared of it. He may not be scared of it in the physical world, but in a dream world, it brings him back to that the day that he died. Or
maybe.
Or drowned. Yeah.
The day that he probably
died. The day he air quote drowned.
The way he's more mindless.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much the consensus that we had too. Like, he's subconsciously afraid of the water. Especially,
or even consciously, but just is able to bury that when he is awake. Whereas when you're having a nightmare, we've all had them, you know, you can be afraid of mundane objects in a nightmare. And so, you know, Freddie, it's like, I think as Bobby was just saying, Freddie tapped into a very deep and dark place in him with that, which in Freddie's, you know, that's kind of his MO. He takes you to what you're most afraid of.
Yeah, for sure.
But that brings me, do you remember when I was talking about the Jason's mask theory, that when he puts the mask on, he becomes that strong individual, which I think, yeah, and it's why he's not afraid of it as much in the physical world, because of that mask after he traumatic event.
Admittedly, in the scenes in most of the movies that you see him in the water, he is in control of the situation,
which I believe is due to that mask.
Except maybe you could probably argue against that and say the end of part six, but. I think you're probably right about that as with the mask thing too. Actually, and this is to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, that might explain why he doesn't travel outside of the barn in part three, because he didn't have the mask yet. You didn't really see him go out of the barn until after he's got the mask on. So you might, yeah, that makes sense. Makes total sense.
Didn't want to come out underdressed.
Man, see, I missed your one-liner. You're like the Freddy of this show.
speaking of one-liners, I believe that Scar had said something about his favorite line was when Kelly.
Well, Kelly Rawlings is her real name.
Kelly Rawlings. And when when she started talking or whatever, and he turned around, he's like, ooh,
dark meat. How sweet, dark meat. But you see a lot of callbacks in this, because that's a callback to another Freddy film where he says how sweet. It doesn't say dark meat, I don't think, but you see a lot of callbacks to the Freddy movies in this movie, specifically where Trey's friend, whatever his name is sitting on the porch right after, you know, all that's happened at the beginning, then he sees the goat just chilling.
Yeah.
Which I never understood the reason for that, even in the fucking film it came from.
You know, I in a lot of ways think this movie was somewhat ahead of its time. If you think about some of the greatest horror movies ever, fun is never a word used to describe them. But when you watch this film, it's actually fun. It's a fun film, and it reminds me a lot today of the type of movies that come out in the summer that get so much shit. And the only way to ever defend them is to just remind people, like, look, did it entertain you for a couple hours? Did you have fun? Yeah, the acting wasn't all that great. Yeah, it was a little over the top. It was a little cheesy, a little silly. But at the end of the day, it was fun, right? And over the past 10 years, we've been getting those in the form of the quote-unquote summer blockbuster. And this movie felt like that type of film ahead of its time in the horror genre, because there's not many other horror movies you can really describe as fun.
Yeah, it's definitely reminiscent of a lot of the comic book movies that are coming out right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I get what you're saying about that for sure. You know, I want them to remake Freddy versus Jason and cast Kane Hodder.
You and Kane, man. Have you told him yet?
No, it's not that. But like, we've always said this on the show. Kane is arguably one of the best Jasons to ever put on the mask. Like. That is an argument that you can't even hardly argue against it. I mean, yeah, you might be able to place one or two other ones ahead of him, but like He was arguably one of the best Jasons, but he was in the shittiest written movies out of all the other movies. The shittiest ones.
Yeah. They were all terrible. All of them.
Exactly. And I just think that him being in Freddy versus Jason would have put a nice end cap on his time as Jason. Like, after that, if he never played him again, I'd have been totally fine with it. I mean, obviously, you couldn't have put him in the reboot. Given the way that they made Jason in that film, Kane Hodder would not have been able to pull that off as well as Derek Mears. And I can't wait to talk about that movie, because that's going to be
a fun Yes, one Derek too. Mears made a great Leatherface.
You know, I think this one had some of my favorite kills out of the series too, particularly the very first one.
Oh, fuck yes, where he kills Trey.
Upstairs.
Yeah, where he kills
Trey. Yeah, man, I was waiting for that to happen anyway, but that one was like particularly brutal.
Oh, well, yeah, with him, you knew as soon as he walked into the damn door, you knew this motherfucker is getting off like quickly. And the thing that I like about that kill is like that's the only time in this whole movie where Ken even shows a single tinge of emotion. You could tell Jason was furious when he was killing Trey, man. Like, I remember seeing that in the theater, like, oh, damn, he mad.
Basically, man. It's just
unfortunately. Yeah, unfortunately, Ken's performance just went downhill from there. But
yeah, there's that too. But you know, had a lot of good kills when he cuts the dude in half in the hospital, the sheriff's head through the control panel. I really enjoyed him.
Yeah, I really liked when he went up against Freebird too. That was a good scene. Where, you know, Freebird, who is actually overtaken by the essence of Freddy, I guess, is just sitting there with the tranks behind his back, like, no, I got this.
Speaking of which, that was actually one of my favorite scenes, was before Freddy possessed him, entered inside of him.
Penetrated in him.
Before Freddy penetrated him. That was one of my favorite scenes, because it had a cool little reference to Alice in Wonderland when Freddy Caterpillar came out.
Here's what I want to know about that scene. Here's what I want to know about that scene. What the fuck kind of weed was that motherfucker smoking?
Good shit. Some of that good kind
Wonderland shit, man.
That Alice in Wonderland, homie.
Wonderland.
Well, that's 40G.
Yeah, but they. In Alice in Wonderland, he wasn't toking fucking weed.
Well, that's the reason.
Right smoking, down the rabbit hole.
He was smoking some opiates.
Well, we don't know it wasn't shisha, first of all, because it's only implied that he smoked, because the guy that was in the room with him was, you know, puffing on a little bit of the Mary Jane. So it was only implied that Freddy Krueger's a stoner. He might be, because, I mean, if you look at the...
I was talking about Freebird himself. Like... What the fuck kind of weed is going to knock you on your ass that hard that you base – like, like it's – like, I smoked a bit when I was, like, much younger than I am, but I had never had anything.
Well, you got to remember, he's a habitual smoker.
Which is even less of a reason for it to have done what it did to him.
It may.
Because for Freddy to come along, he would have had the fella fall asleep.
Yeah, he probably smoked some good stuff earlier in the day. Smoke some good stuff midday, and then probably smoke some stuff that night. He was probably tired by the time he was smoking.
Running for his fucking life, and he's just like going to. I know you Heck guys yeah. can't see. We're he's actually been, on video today, and you guys can't see me like fainting, you know, fainting and shit. But
he did some cardio, got a little high. It really hit him. It affected him some kind of way. So he passed out. I'm not going to say I've been there before.
But I've been there.
But I've been there before.
I just feel like whoever wrote that scene like had no idea like the effects weed would have on someone.
Yeah, whoever came up with it might have been going to process, and then somebody else was like, "Oh my god, this is awesome!" And they're like, "Let's keep it. Somebody get that man a promotion."
Yeah, but I'm just sitting there thinking, like, what the fuck was he smoking? Because the dancer wasn't weak.
It was in a time, so it's going to do whatever, you know, Freddie wants it to do. So.
Yeah, but you have to be asleep first. I guess maybe they're insinuating.
In this movie, you don't actually see them. You don't actually know, per se, that they're falling asleep, from what I recall. It just kind of happens.
I suppose. But yeah, I'm just like, you know, weed does not do that to someone.
And how would you know, sir? And how would you know?
I think I just admitted a couple minutes ago that I had smoked some weed when I was a kid.
But you didn't inhale.
No, I definitely did. Lots.
Shh.
Cutting that out. But like that, that leads me to one of my favorite scenes is when they're in the van trying to resuscitate Jason to get him up.
You got to give him mouth to mouth.
Where Freddie is killing him, and Chris Marquette's character, actually, I think his name is, what is his name in this? I don't remember his name, but Chris Marquette, you know, he's like, I can't give him mouth to mouth. I have asthma.
I would love to use that excuse. I'd be fed. You heard him. He has asthma. Do it. You were in Destiny's Child. Please don't pretend you've kissed him out that you haven't kissed him out that dirty before.
Oh shit.
Wow, I don't remember a lot of the characters' names in this movie, even though I've probably seen this one the most. What about you, Steve? What was your favorite kill?
My favorite kill is probably a non-kill. The wink, if you will. I think the killing of Freddy, yet not killing him, is probably my favorite kill.
Yeah, I was pissed about that because at that point, you can't even definitively say Jason won or Freddy won. It was a fucking draw.
But I think that's ultimately what I liked about it. You spoke earlier about how you wanted Kane Hodder to be in this to kind of get that nice send-off, if you will, from the franchise. And I think, for all intents and purposes, Robert Englund absolutely got that. You know, he performed brilliantly in the movie. He was on the stage. It was fairly well received as far as the people that were into the franchise. It didn't do well commercially, if I remember correctly. But, you know, even in his supposed death, he still gave you that last sarcastic fuck you. So I think it was kind of the perfect send-off for Robert Englund.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, absolutely.
I think, like, that last thing with Freddie, it was kind of a letdown, though, because at that point, man, like, when I left the theater, I'm like, here we are, and no sequel. So that kind of made me sad.
Well, I mean, you obviously we didn't get a sequel to that in film, but they did end up there. I think that one of their initial ideas for that movie was to have Freddie and Jason and Ash from The Evil Dead all in one film. When that didn't pan out, they ended up using that sort of story arc to launch into, you know, a comic series or whatever. So Freddy versus Jason versus Ash did in fact come to fruition, but in comic book form. So, I mean, technically we did get sort of a sequel to that, but I know not all the people that watch the films also read comic books. So probably a lot of people didn't even know that.
I do read comic books and I did not know that existed.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to get too far down talking about the comics, but I mean, I guess it was good. It sort of gave you an explanation of how, if you subscribe to the fact that Jason did die when he was a boy, it sort of explains how Pamela was able to bring him back, which obviously with the Necronomicon stuff. So technically, if you go by that, Jason is a deadite.
Well, wasn't there talk, or was it all just rumor of, I mean, even outside of Ash, wasn't there some pretty serious talks, or at least preliminary talks, of expanding it to other horror icons?
There might have been some talk about a Leatherface, you know, squaring off a Leatherface.
There was. Jason versus Leatherface?
That, again, got turned into a comic book.
Okay.
So, I mean, you can check it out.
Yeah.
I haven't read that one yet, but it is out there.
And I know they're all from different studios and there's a lot of things that have to go into it, but you would think with any of the 80s horror icons doing something like this today would actually be relatively lucrative, because I think it just, like I said, it people look for fun in films now, and I think doing that does that explicitly. So it would probably do very well.
Chucky versus Michael.
I would take it.
I mean, yeah, I would watch it.
Absolutely. Which, side note, if anyone has seen the reboot that Chucky did from a couple years ago, it is surprisingly fantastic. And it was a straight-to-DVD film that did very well.
Interesting. I did not even know that.
Yep.
Wow. I got to check that out.
I know a movie I'm going to go watch now.
I know. That will be my next DVD purchase or Blu-ray or whatever, for sure.
Or if any of y'all out there in TV land wants to send us a copy, what's up?
Yeah, just email me, chris@campbloodpodcast.com, and we'll work out the details.
Or if there's any pirates, send it online.
No, we're not gonna advocate that.
We don't promote piracy. Stop what you're doing, you evil people.
Yeah.
These actors and actresses work very hard for you just to sit there and download a movie.
It went straight to Blu-ray. I don't know how much they would care.
At least someone's watching it.
I mean, that's a strong decision. Let's make this film and give up on theaters immediately. But no, it surprisingly was good.
All right, gentlemen, let's transition into some listener mails. So, Mark from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Oh.
International.
Eh?
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about, eh? Sorry, Mark. First off, love the show. Have to say the theories are my favorite part. You guys make me go back and see things in the movies I'd overlooked in the past, almost like watching them for the first time. I have a question for you guys. With the new movie coming out, if you were given the chance to have complete control over the entire movie, what would you have in it? Like everything from characters to actors to storyline, how would you make this upcoming Friday the 13th if you had all the say in the world? Personally, I would like to see them continue on with the 2009 reboot timeline and introduce Tommy Jarvis back into the series.
Yeah.
And if not that, have, again, focused on Tommy Jarvis and have old Feldman come back and play an adult version of Tommy Jarvis. And maybe Kane is Jason in that film because, you know.
Shocker.
Well, Kane was asked about that in a Q&A on a panel that he did, and he was like, yeah, I'd love to come back and kick Corey Feldman's ass. So, like, any storylines that I would like to see, I would love to see Tommy Jarvis make a comeback, basically continuing from the 2009 reboot.
And I think it's always – Easter eggs are really fun. So throwing Easter eggs in that are a throwback to the early parts of the franchise would be amazing. I think anytime people get that homage paid, even if the film doesn't live up to their expectations, it softens the blow a little. Like, for instance, Crazy Ralph's bike was in the tunnel in the 2009 reboot. Wait.
What's that you say?
Good at Camp Blood, ain't you? You'll never come back again.
Nice.
It's got a death curse.
Always going to have Crazy Ralph.
But no, the other thing I would say is, and as someone who was a fan of horror for the better part of my life until it got really, really bad in the mid-2000s, I don't know why slasher films have always tended to – I'm sure budget is the answer, but outside of that, I don't know why slasher films have always shied away from known actors, big-name actors. I don't know if it's the films themselves that shy away or the actors that shy away, but I don't think there's any – reason to do that. I think if there were to be another one made, having some celebrities in there that people recognize that can bring people in, it exposes people to slasher films that might otherwise never have been interested. So I think at least one or two, you know, at least B-list actors is something that they could stand to do.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's just because of the stigma that horror supposedly carries is why you don't see more big name actors doing them. Yeah, I mean, outside of a very select few, I can't think of any horror movie that really had a big-name actor in them.
Well, I mean, you can. They just weren't big-name at that time, right?
Well, sure.
Some of them obviously went on to Johnny Depp.
Yeah, Kevin Bacon in the first Friday. Johnny Depp in the first Nightmare. Yeah.
And that's the thing. Even now, people remember those kills in particular as a result of those actors' names. And I find it hard to believe that in the, you know, vast world that is Hollywood, that there aren't some known celebrities who are a fan of the genre that would love to be in that film.
Yeah, I mean, it could be for budgetary reasons too. I mean, like you said, because studios don't dole out a lot of money to make horror movies. I mean, even now, it took till 2009 for us to get a decently budgeted. Technically, Freddy vs. Jason, I'm sure, had a pretty decent budget, and it showed. It was excellent visuals, same as the 2009 reboot. But another. And you could even add this in there, but I would like to see a more of an exploration of Jason's past. Maybe I'd really love to see Adrian King come play, reprise Betsy Palmer's role as Pamela. I know she's on this show a couple times expressed interest in doing so. And I think that if they cast anybody to do it, it should be Adrian King. Yeah, might be a little biased on that one.
Maybe. I think my big thing would, I'd just like to see the backstory, just something, whatever happened before with his mom, and like to explore some sort of story with his dad. See all that comedy. I just like to see a lot of the dynamic, because like I said, like, we offer rocker shit, but I mean, that could be due to the thing, but I'd like to see a little more of the dynamic that kind of, I'd like to see how they were, how they interacted. You know what I mean? Try to see if there was anything that contributed to that with his dad.
Yeah. Loyal listeners to the show know we covered Pamela's tale way back. Like, I think that was like episode like 3. We covered that, it got into a little bit of the backstory, but yeah, to see it in a film, I think would be definitely worth it. What about you, Bobby?
That's a tough question, because I just have so many ideas running through my head right now.
Don't lie.
I can't lie. I would have Christopher Walken cast as Crazy Ralph.
don't
go up to the house. There's a death curse.
Yes.
I would like to see David Spade cast as one of the survivor girls or one of the final girls. Maybe Adam Sandler is one of the jocks.
So now you're just basically like reading off 90s SNL right now.
So we just have a Happy Madison production.
Pretty much, yeah.
Happy Madison in conjunction with Paramount and New Line. Yeah, I can see that.
Sounds like a Funnier Die thing.
Rob Schneider played Jason.
Yes, you're getting it.
And he talks in it.
But at the end of it, you learn a life lesson. That you can be ugly and still be loved.
And then Rob's just like that, like over there, hey, Crazy Ralph making copies.
and of course, this movie should take place in Manhattan.
We've already had that. How about like Chicago somehow?
In the cornfields in the middle of the country.
We've already had that one too. Freddy vs. Jason. You just watched that fucking movie today. So, like, in Chicago or something.
No, I just wanted to take place in Manhattan to undo what was.
I'm sorry, but this just came
up. Is that?
Yes.
Is that with Bobby's cast? 90s SNL people?
And Paulie Shore.
But I just it just hit me what a great versus movie would be. Freddy versus Children of the Corn.
What the fuck? yeah, like half of that shit's getting cut out.
But that's who I would have cast in my movie.
we also got like a slew of iTunes reviews. So I'm gonna give shout outs to some of these folks. It seems like a lot of them had a lot to say about Jim Elliot, so that's going to be fun. Not Pepper gave us a 5-star review. They said, fuck Jim Elliot. This is a great show that prompts more fun debates among my friends. Ridiculous theories abound, but seem plausible once reviewing the films. Thanks, fellas, and congrats to Steve on the award. Not the Steve in studio tonight.
But I will take it. Thank you.
It's the Jim Elliot Doucher of the Year Award.
I will take that as well.
Let's see. I don't even know how to pronounce this.
So hold on. Let me. Is Jim Elliot is the one. I actually picked up a random episode that you had on, I think it was YouTube. Jim Elliot is the one that was basically flaming the shit out of you that you then gave a nice rebuttal to. Was that this?
No, Jim Elliot gave us like our first. Actually, I think he was like literally the first person who emailed the show, and he had negative shit to say about how we did our first episode because, you know, Allie was on it. My daughter was on it.
Oh, okay.
And we cursed. So he did not like my parenting style.
I see.
So Trek BR, I guess. I don't know how to pronounce that, but he gave us a 5-star review. He said, fun, hilarious, and helps me relax after a long day. Being a fan of Friday the 13th and the wonderful Thank God It's Friday the 13th podcast, I'm glad Christian from that show recommended this one. The hosts play off each other so well, and you can tell they really have fun. It makes the show fun, fresh, and makes me look forward to each episode. Keep it up, guys. Yeah, the TGIF 13 guys are friends of this show. We've had Christian on before. In case you didn't know, our long-lost co-host Oz now does a show with him. Called Postmortem Radio, if you want to check that out. That's on iTunes and I think Stitcher and all the rest of the places. And they do a more general horror show. They've had some pretty interesting guests so far, so check them out. Always appreciate Christian shouting us out and stuff.
Definitely.
A person with the username FU Jim Elliot gave us a 5-star review. Blood gushing greatness. I've been a long time listener of the show and just now getting around to reviewing. These guys know their Friday films, have strong theories, and expose Rick for the piece of shit he is.
Excuse me, sir. You will not speak of Rick in that tone of voice.
I think like that's not the only person that says something about Rick. I think the next one does too.
I do not care.
Yeah.
Do you understand who Rick passed up to hang out with that day?
Was it the Mary Jo Conrad?
The Mary fucking Jo Conrad. And it makes me mad when people speak ill of Rick.
It's a 5-star review to that reviewer. Blood gushing greatness.
Oh yeah.
If ever this show needs a tagline, you may have just written it.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. He said more stuff. I was truly happy to do the NES walkthrough video for y'all as well. I'm sure you figure out who I am. Keep up the good work, fellas, and I'll be ready to game with Eric on Xbox One when the new Friday the 13th is released. P.S. Fuck you, Jim Elliot. I need to figure out a way to get this walkthrough off Facebook because he posted it to Facebook. As soon as I do, I will put it up on our YouTube channel. I'll either redo it like with proper streaming, you know, capabilities, or I'll just leave it as it is. Either way, it teaches you how to beat the fucking original NES game pretty quickly, which if you're like me, I've never finished that game. Fuck that game. It was like the most stressful game I've ever played because it was hard to figure out what to do.
That was NES games in general. I mean, honestly, if you don't believe me, play The Lion King for regular Nintendo as a grown man and try to beat it.
All right. Foxaholic gave us a 4-star, which I'm not going to bitch about it. Almost perfect. This show is really great for Friday fans. I recommend for sure. I love the debate on whether or not Jason actually died in the lake. I believe he died and came back to life that night to avenge his mother. He had superhuman strength in part 3, crushing the head of Douchey McRapist and surviving an axe to the head and being hung. Come back from being pronounced dead in part 4. I think when these movies came out, people didn't need explanations for everything, like the midichlorian generation now. A nice Star Wars reference, sir. Suspension of disbelief was easier. As an atheist and a skeptic, I believe Jason to be supernatural from the day he drowned to today. You are not being a very good skeptic, sir, if you want to talk supernatural stuff. I'm just kidding. Obviously, these are just movies. I think the general consensus with us is that he did not die. But of course, you know that. All right, so being that he is on the other side of the world, he seems to have dropped audio. he just wants me to sign him off. But final thoughts on Freddy versus Jason. And since Bobby is dicking around on his phone, I'll let Steve go first.
Now, like I said earlier, it's like Chris said, it's my favorite film in the franchise by far. It's the one I'm most familiar with. And it's just ultimately fun. It's one of those films when I'm looking through my DVD rack and I want to throw something in, it gets chosen quite a bit because it's just a fun film and it pays so much homage to so many movies between Freddy and Jason, both that I grew up with and I loved a lot. And I love the homage paid to it, the Easter eggs that are in it, the fun, well-written plot, the ending for Robert Englund, all of it. I just think it's a great film overall.
Agreed. What about you, Bobby?
I can agree to the same. It was definitely worth the watch. I would definitely recommend it for anybody that hasn't really seen any of the movies and they're not really that interested in it. I'd say, yeah, you could definitely watch that and you could kind of get a small taste of everything, especially, I mean, even if you're not into just horror in general.
Yeah, for me, like if somebody's never really seen the Jason movie but they like Nightmare, I'll point them to that.
Yeah.
But if they've never seen either, definitely my go-to is the reboot. But yeah, I get your point. For sure.
Yeah, you get the best of both worlds in one place.
Absolutely.
Robert Englund, definitely always enjoyed. I've always been a Freddy fan. I don't care what anybody says. He's fun. He can make you laugh. He'll make you cry. He'll make you shit your pants.
All of the above.
And
he could play the fucking shark in Jaws. Fuck Ben Affleck.
But yes, I thoroughly enjoyed the movie.
Roger that.
Or stick out.
Well, all right. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever the fuck you listen to this show. If you want to support us financially, head over to campbloodpodcast.com/donate. If you have a question or a theory, you can hit us up at campbloodpodcast.com/feedback or comment on the show notes at campbloodpodcast.com/63. A special thanks goes out to the Downriver Rat for our intro and outro music. You can check his stuff out at thedownriverrat.com. Until next time.